unveiled our plan for K-12 education. Hopefully you've all gotten it. You can go to americannext.org for this plan. Not going to obviously read the plan to you today. It's got a lot of detail, but I wanted to spend a few minutes summarizing for you, and be more than happy to take your questions. Now, what we presented today, I'm sure, is going to upset some folks, especially on the left, but it's time we told the truth about the state of America's educational system. There was a time when our educational system was the envy of the world. However, there was also a time when assembly line manufacturing and Model Ts in Detroit was also the envy of the world. Just as American auto manufacturing has evolved, adapted, modernized to changing technologies and dynamics, our education system needs to also. But it's stuck in the mud. It's spinning its tires. It's going nowhere unless we make big changes soon. It is time to change from our old industrial age pre-internet education model to once again become the envy of the world. But here's the sad reality. In America today, we do not provide equal opportunity in education. That is an indisputable truth, maybe an inconvenient truth to use our recent label. Make no mistake, this is a crisis in America. The people who are standing in the way of a comeback are the Democratic Party. The simple fact is that the entrenched status quo in education is kept alive by teacher unions and the Democrat Party. They are holding us back by insisting on an antiquated, one-size-fits-all delivery system. Members of the Democratic Party are hypocrites when it comes to education. They pretend to care about education, but then they deny an equal opportunity for our kids. The reason is simple. The Democrat Party is bought and sold by the teacher unions. The Democratic Party is literally standing in the schoolhouse door blocking every child from having an equal opportunity to get a great education. And our children are the casualties. The honest truth today is that if a family's got the means to live in an area with great public schools or to send their kids to great private schools or to homeschool their children, they can and will give their kids a first-rate education. If a family doesn't have the means, there's a great chance their kids will never have the opportunity for a first-rate education and instead are at a much greater risk of living a life in poverty. That's not only bad for those kids, but it's also bad for our country. There are all kinds of studies showing the trillions of dollars we could add to our economy, the thousands of dollars for students, if we improved our educational system, even to the level of Canada next door or to some of the other countries we compete with. But it's more than that. If we want to have a self-governing republic, we have to have an educated citizenry. Now, the defenders of the status quo will always tell you they're going to make changes. They tell us just to wait, to be patient. The problem is that our kids only grew up once. We don't have time for incremental reforms. We don't have time to keep banging our heads against the wall. Now, we detailed plenty of policy solutions in today's paper. There are three main principles. The first, most importantly, we need to allow the dollars to follow the child instead of making the child follow the dollars. This is the modern way of thinking. We need to give parents more choice. Giving families, parents, students more choices lead to better results. This means allowing parents to send their children to a school that best meets their needs. The reality is it could be a public school, a charter school, an online school, a home school. It could be tutoring, it could be a private school, it could be dual enrollment, it could be a combination. The parents know best. We've done this. We've aggressively enacted school choice in Louisiana. We're seeing the results. Over 90% of kids in New Orleans now attend charter schools. 7,000 kids statewide are using the scholarship program in Louisiana to attend the school of their choice. Parental satisfaction is over 90%. This has grown over 1,000% in the last 6 years, projected to continue to grow. Now, the opponents hate this, and we indeed had a union leader in Louisiana that said, poor parents don't have a clue when it comes to making educational choices for their kids. It shouldn't be any surprise. The Obama administration has shown again and again they don't think that the American people are smart enough to live their own lives. That's what this fight is about. It's about empowering parents to make choices for their kids. Secondly, we've got to reform teacher tenure laws. You know, those that devote their lives to teaching our kids should be held in the highest regard. We must get out of the mode, though, of paying teachers for how long they've been breathing. We owe it to our kids and to our teachers to give them the best learning environment possible. That means giving them the best possible teachers. Good teachers need to be rewarded. Underperforming teachers need to be put on notice. Ultimately, they need to be dismissed if they don't improve. We need to get rid of lifelong tenure protections. Instead of having these high barriers to entry and low barriers to retention, we need the opposite. We need to make it easier for folks that have a background and have a college degree, may not have gone to a college of education, to become teachers, and then hold them accountable. If they don't do a good job, we don't want them to stay in the classroom. If they don't improve, But it makes no sense right now. We focus on inputs, and a lot of this is because of the teacher unions. A lot of this is we're forced to pay based on seniority or hire and fire based only on seniority. We have changed that in Louisiana. We've got to change that across the country. We talk in detail about how we've got to reverse the stranglehold teachers unions have. Third, education is best directed at the local level, not by the federal government. In today's debate, that means getting rid of Common Core. Common Core first came out. It was described as an effort led by states to seek high standards for our students, a local-led voluntary effort. It actually sounded pretty good. But now it has become a way for the federal government to dictate a national curriculum. The left will tell you if you oppose Common Core, you're opposed to higher standards, and that is absolutely not true. High standards are critical for our success, and certainly those of us that oppose Common Core are for high standards. But in today's education world, we are testing our students to the point of absurdity. Certainly some level of testing is necessary, but in too many cases, our teachers are forced to teach to the test year-round. While teaching the test, they're teaching the federal curriculum that is required to excel on these tests. I know a few years ago, some of the media said those opposing Common Core were just a bunch of right-wingers. And as more teachers were exposed, there was a second group that began to sound the alarm as well. Now there's a new group that's insisting on getting rid of Common Core, and those are called parents. I would never bet against the moms in this debate, and I think they're going to be ultimately successful. You know, it's bad enough that the federal government under President Obama is trying to tie compliance with Common Core to federal funds and waivers, but once you see the methods of the homework that accompanies Common Core, especially the math, the verdict is in, Common Core has got to go. Improving our education system shouldn't be a partisan issue. There's a lot more detail in the report. I'm not going to go through all that now. I'll be happy to talk about it, or you can look at it. But in millions and millions of homes across our country, improving our educational system is not a partisan issue. I can tell you from personal experience that some of the people who have been impacted by our reforms in Louisiana probably didn't vote for me. That's fine. We didn't pursue these reforms to win an election. Political consultants would tell you to avoid some of these issues, but it is the right thing to do. And the reality is it's consistent with our conservative principles. It is time for the Democratic Party to do the right thing, to send the teacher unions packing. Too much is at stake for our children to play politics. It's time for some political courage. And this is especially relevant here in D.C. You see the debate around reauthorizing No Child Left Behind. I'll close with this final observation. We need to scale back the involvement of the federal government. That means, for example, block granting the dollars that come out of the Department of Education. That means cutting their budget substantially. That also means the federal Department of Education should be focused on their traditional roles of deregulation, transparency, of true civil rights, but not all the extraneous, not all the other baggage they've picked up along the way under leaders in both parties. And with that, I'll stop there. Again, there's a lot more detail in the book about what we've done, about what should be done across the country to reform our educational system, or organize around those three principles. At this point, I want to stop and take your questions and comments. So, operator, if you could tell folks how they can signal to you that they're ready to make a comment or ask a question.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you have any questions at this time, please press the number one key. Once again, if questions at this time, please press the number one key. Our first question is from Dan McLaughlin. Go ahead, Dan.
Hi, Governor. It's Dan McLaughlin from Red State.
Hey, Dan.
A question about you refer in the plan to not wanting school choice to become a Trojan horse that allows the money to follow the student, and the federal government walks in, you know, one step behind and turns the schools, private schools in particular, into something like a cookie cutter replica of the public school. My question is what needs to be done to prevent that in the long term? Obviously, in the short term, it's possible for a governor or a president to keep their particular branch of government from intruding. But what protection? Is there a need for either a constitutional amendment or federal statute that would keep federal courts and the Justice Department and federal education regulators from using school choice as a lever to control private schools?
And that's a great question, and it's not just a hypothetical one. You've seen in recent years, you saw the holder Obama Department of Justice try to sue us to stop choice in our school choice program. You saw them go and try to eliminate the D.C. school choice program. You saw them try to use the ADA to go after Wisconsin's choice program. You've also seen this administration try to use Race to the Top funding and No Child Left Behind waivers to try to force students in a Common Core. So this is more than a theoretical question. I think there are three things that have to be done. One, and we talk about getting rid of the regulations, not just in private schools that take public dollars, but across the board. And so for first, we have to get rid of, for example, the certification monopoly. This insistence that everybody has to have a college of education certificate or degree to go and teach in our schools, which is ridiculous. The data show that that is not always a good predictor for how well students are going to learn. We need lower barriers to entry and then evaluate how teachers are doing actually once they get there. We also need to get rid of this testing monopoly. So we talk about benchmarking so that schools have a greater array of tests they can use to, instead of just the state or federal mandated tests. There are ways to do benchmarking. You can compare how students are doing on different tests that schools can choose for themselves. And the third, it's just this whole idea of empowering parents. The best counter to all these intrusive micromanagement and regulations is making sure that we entrust parents to choice. I think transparency is the best way to ensure that kids are getting a great education. But the left absolutely doesn't believe this. And they absolutely will tell you, well, parents don't have the tools, they're not smart enough to make these choices. And that's just a philosophical debate. This is the same left that tells you you're not smart enough to buy an insurance product, health insurance product on your own. You're not smart enough to have religious liberty rights. You're not smart enough to have Second Amendment gun rights. You're not smart enough to drink big gulps if you happen to live in New York City. So this is a bigger philosophical fact. But one, we need to draw the line at these intrusive regulations, whether it's certification on teachers, whether it's the testing, there are these other regulations. And we argue, for example, with these tax rebate programs, that these are private dollars. And even for publicly funded school scholarship programs, they should come with a very bare minimum of state or local regulations. Other than transparency, other than auditing the public dollars, it really shouldn't get into all this micromanagement, because AEI and others have shown over time, charter schools and others that started with the idea of flexibility and freedom, regulations calcified. Over time, they lose their flexibility on things like the length of the school day, the length of the school year, and other types of intrusive. You know, some of the regulations on what we mentioned are the staff to student ratios that may not make sense if we're given some of these online tools. You get some of these shady contracts and get really absurd. They try to micromanage, for example, you know, bulletin boards and all kinds of nonsense. So one, I think that even those schools that aren't taking public dollars, as well as those schools taking public dollars, we need to cut back on a lot of the excessive regulations. Secondly, in terms of the federal Department of Education, you mentioned, you know, federal statutes. We've got federal laws preventing federal intrusion into curriculum decisions. So what the federal government has done to get around that, to violate that law, is to try to coerce states with funding. And that's why I think we need to block grant a lot of the federal funding, Title I and other funding, cut back or eliminate a lot of the unnecessary funding. For example, a lot of the teacher quality funding hasn't been effective, either block grant or eliminate these programs. But we need to severely cut back the Department of Education's autonomy and discretionary funding so they don't have the tools to be making this kind of mischief and micromanaging, over-regulating the state and local governments and get back to their traditional core missions of deregulation, transparency, and civil rights. Third and finally, this is the most important thing. You know, we can have great leaders, we can have good laws. What this administration has shown, if you've got folks on the left that are committed, they will go around whatever stands in their way to try to impose their ideological worldview. I think we need to create a culture where people trust parents and build a broad bipartisan coalition at the local level where parents demand autonomy and choice. I think that's what you see with Common Core. You see this organic ground-up rebellion against people trying to tell them that these bureaucrats know their kids better than they do. But what I worry about passing one good law or one good amendment is this administration has shown their ability to pervert the law to get around school choice. So, for example, they went after our school choice program. They hid behind desegregation laws, even though over 90% of the kids were from minority families, over 90% of the parents are happy with their results. So they will use even seemingly innocuous laws or laws that tell them they're not supposed to do something, and they will get around those restrictions. I think there's, and that doesn't mean we shouldn't try to pass good laws and deregulate and get this power out of D.C., but we've really got to also, in addition to all that, create a culture that demands parents have choice, have autonomy, have the power. And look, there are Republicans that we have to convince of this. It's not just a Democrat issue. There are a lot of Republicans that will tell you parents aren't smart enough, or they'll try to tell you. In this upcoming election, I hope there are Republicans that believe in Common Core and believe in a bigger role for the federal government in education. I hope that they'll make their case and engage in this very important discussion, and I think voters will get to decide that.
Our next question is from Shane Vanderhart. Go ahead, Shane.
Hi, Governor Jindal. A couple of questions related to teacher accountability. One, as you mentioned, not teaching, you know, teachers teaching the test. I was wondering if you disagree with linking teacher evaluations with assessments.
Jay, thank you for getting on the call. You know, that's something we've done in Louisiana with our teacher evaluations, from hiring and firing and tenure and other aspects. Was not just done based on seniority. I absolutely do think that we should link teacher evaluations to student achievement. But the bigger point is this: on testing, two big reforms to testing. One, right now, there's this obsession that everybody's got to use the same test. So, you know, the federal government is pushing PARC and Smarter Balance, and the reality is when it's tested, gets taught, through benchmarking, it is possible to identify, you know, to have such a variety of tests that leads to a variety of curriculum. And so I think it's possible through benchmarking and other measures that we've described here that not every school's got to use every same test. I'd rather schools would have a greater choice in using their own tests, devising their own tests. For example, many private schools today use different types of assessments, and we should be encouraging that. There are ways that you can benchmark so that students can take one test and still we have an ability to make sure they're actually learning a year's worth of material. Secondly, I also think that we need more, and we described this in the paper, we need more waivers so that schools that are doing a good job, schools that have been able to show they're teaching a year's worth of material in a year's time, should have the ability to waive, to get flexibility and waivers from all these tests. Maybe want to have a different way to make sure their students are learning. Maybe they want to do AP tests, or maybe they want to do character lessons and assessments, or they have other approaches. And the point being that we've got to get away from this pretest, the pre-pretest, the pre-pretest, and we need the other side to admit that what gets tested gets taught. The reason testing arose in the first place, we need to remind ourselves, it was to address social promotion. It was to address a lot of real deficiencies in education in America. I think the pendulum has swung too far the other way. And I think that even though certainly there's a reasonable requirement that there are public dollars, and, you know, it's reasonable to look for some level of assessment and accountability, this one-size-fits-all testing, this increased frequency of testing is not the answer. And the final point I'd make, when we link teacher evaluations to student achievement, which I think makes sense, a lot of the policies, though, that we're making have greater consequences because we're doing them in the context of a government monopoly system. So when the government screws up with something like Common Core, it's got a much greater impact because parents don't have a release valve. They don't get to vote with their feet. The reality is that the extent we move towards a student-centered system where the dollars follow the kids, they're divisible, they're backpacked, so that the kids and the parents get to make, the parents on behalf of the kids get to make these choices, then as long as you've got more transparency, the best accountability is choice. The reality is parents on their own will put their kids in the best schools. If you give school leaders, we talk about this, more flexibility and responsibility for running their schools, and then they have to compete for students, they're on their own going to want to go find the best teachers and keep and pay the best teachers. And you don't have to force them. Right now, I feel like many things that we do are band-aids because we're still working in a government-run monopoly system. The more that you have choice, the more that you have flexibility, the less sometimes you'll need these band-aids. We need radical surgery in these cases. We have real choice. The best accountability system by far is transparency and then parental choice. Then all these band-aids wouldn't be nearly as important.
Okay, just a quick follow-up question.
The next question, Todd. Go ahead, Todd.
Hello, Governor. I'm with TJ.com. I was at a school board meeting not too long ago where a group of teachers who were defending Common Core addressed the parents who were frustrated with it and gave this analogy that you wouldn't expect anybody to just go out with their tool belt and help build a bridge. You require specialist engineers, and that's why teachers are the ones who are on the right side of this and the parents don't truly understand what they're talking about. What is wrong with that analogy?
There's a lot wrong with that analogy. You got a couple of things. One, I think it's fairly arrogant for anybody, whether it be D.C. bureaucrats or others, to tell parents, look, you're just not smart enough to know what your children need. The parents know their children best. They know where they're going to flourish. Parents want what's best for their children. They're going to seek out the best education. My dad's the only one out of 9 kids that got past the 5th grade. His parents weren't necessarily educated. They didn't have a formal education, but they were passionate about making sure their son got a great education, and I wouldn't be here if they hadn't done that. So, one, I think it starts by trusting parents and saying, you know, it's awfully paternalistic for anybody to say, hey, I'm from the government, I'm here to help, and I know what you need better than you do. Secondly, there's this false notion that if you're against Common Core, you're somehow against standards, that you somehow want amateurs to go build your bridges. That's not true at all. You know, those of us that are against Common Core want the highest and most rigorous education and standards and practices in our children's classrooms. We don't think Common Core is that, and we don't think that some unelected group of bureaucrats trying to push a one-size-fits-all approach is the best way to ensure that rigor and that excellence in our classrooms. Having helped my own child with his math homework, he is now in third grade. When he was in second grade, he brought home some of this Common Core math. And even other parents and those with math PhDs will tell you it is very frustrating the way they're trying to teach our kids this math. It is not intuitive to these kids. It is not the way we were taught math. And when you look at it, it didn't have parental input. It didn't have input from local teachers. That's not the way that we develop and devise standards in Louisiana, for example. We allow our universities and others to provide input, and we test those standards. We revise those standards. That didn't happen in this case. And so for a lot of math experts, they will tell you that, you know, there are better ways to teach math. If you want those engineers to go build a bridge, there are better ways to teach your kids math with the Common Core approach. So I think both in process and content, Common Core is a mistake. It is common for people who are for Common Core to try to tell others, well, if you're against Common Core, you must be against excellence or standards. Nothing can be further from the truth. In wanting the best for their kids, not only are those parents doing right by their kids, they're helping society as well. Parents, and this is a very important point, parents are not just one of many stakeholders in this whole debate. They are the reason we have public education. They are there on behalf of their children. Without the children, there is no reason to have education. It's not about the adults in the classroom. Well, just a data point, what I've seen in Louisiana is more and more of our teachers are rebelling against Common Core. It's not just parents. A lot of teachers that are frustrated with the way that it tries to teach math and tries to teach these other subjects. And think about this. Today we're talking about math and reading. Think about if you had a centralized curriculum on American history, and let's say American history became redefined via a series of grievances and victimhood as opposed to the American exceptionalism we all learned about growing up, that is very dangerous to where our country goes from here. And it's not a stretch to imagine the politically correct crowd revising and retelling the story of American history. I don't want those decisions made by some centralized group. There's a reason we have not, under the 10th Amendment to the Constitution and federal law, allowed the federal government to be involved in making these curriculum decisions. So, you know, God bless you for having the patience to go to those meetings. I think it's important that reformers, the parents, and others show up at school board meetings, local legislative hearings. Too often they're dominated by teacher unions and the interest of the status quo. You know, and I can't imagine, you know, it must take the patience of Joe for those parents to have to sit there and listen to teachers telling them, you don't know what's right for your kids, you know, and you shouldn't come and tell us. To me, that's just, and again, as the arrogance of the left, I think they know better than we do what's best for our kids. I trust the wisdom of parents. They'll go out, even if they themselves aren't the math experts, I trust them to go out there and find the best educational environment for their kids to know their kids' needs better. And that's why transparency is so important, so they can make informed decisions, and the financial flexibility is important so they can afford making the best choice for their kids.
Our next question is from Shane Vanderhart. Go ahead, Shane.
Yeah, I just wanted to follow up on a question regarding when you're saying student achievement, linking basically teacher evaluations to student achievement. Do you mean more than assessments, or how would you define student achievement?
Yeah, well, look, what we've done in Louisiana, we've done growth in student achievement, one of these value-added models. What our experience has been is that certainly at the extremes, it works very well, but there's some dangers when you do that. One of the things we've got to do is make sure, for example, we don't penalize high-performing schools and teachers. A lot of these teacher evaluation models do that. You know, they do a good job of rewarding teachers with low-performing students at the beginning of the year that improve those students' performance. They don't do nearly as good of a job with teachers at magnet or gifted schools or schools with high-performing kids, and I don't think you want to punish those teachers that happen to be in those schools. Secondly, just like with principal observations, a lot of those evaluation systems, they have a harder time making differentiation in the middle of the pack. You know, there's a pretty broad middle segment where the data is not as helpful in terms of making those distinctions. But what it has done is it's been a useful way to end lifetime tenure. It's been a useful way to end this idea of the longer you're breathing, the more you get paid in terms of how we reward teachers financially for better student achievement. But, you know, to the students, you know, the teacher assessment, as well as to the previous question on Common Core, again, these are band-aids when you've got a government-run monopoly system. The ideal situation is if you have transparency and choice, the reality is if voters get to vote with their feet, it becomes, yeah, and I'm not saying I'd still want to repeal Common Core. I think it's still a mistake. But at least if parents had the escape valve of being able to send their kids to another school, to a better fit for their kids, it would reduce the consequences of this mistake. And the same thing with teacher evaluation systems. You know, the extent that you had accountability and people could vote with their feet and you know, students were able to move from one school to another. For example, charter schools have to earn their enrollment. You know, students aren't forced to go there. And so there, it makes sense to give, I would argue, the principals a lot more autonomy because they're responsible for managing their schools, and if they don't do a good job, they can actually be shut down. They can go out of business. Same thing's true with private schools. Part of the challenge is we're talking about how do you address the public schools that are operating in that still a virtual monopoly system, and that's why I think it's important to have these, you know, accountability systems. In Louisiana, we also do, in addition to teacher evaluation, we do college of education evaluation systems where we look and see if consistently college of education departments aren't doing a good job in terms of preparing teachers that also produce better student achievement. That's a problem. Another data point that that you'll see from teacher evaluation systems, in addition to doing a better job at the upper and lower end, they also do a better job in aggregate. The data is more accurate in aggregate. So evaluating these teacher preparation programs, I think, has also been a good feedback loop for those programs. But the ultimate accountability, I think, is a choice and transparency system where parents and children can vote with their feet.
Our next question comes from Shannon Bates. Go ahead, Shannon. Shannon Bates, your line is open.
I think this is Bobby. I think we're running close to the end of our call time, so let me just wrap things up. To Shane's question, the last couple of questions, I think that an important point we've got to make is that we've got to work hard in moving towards a choice-based system where we empower parents to have the dollars follow the kids. And as we do that, that is the best way to promote excellence in education. And it's the best way to mitigate the mistakes made by these bureaucrats. The reality is, I trust parents. At the end of the day, that's what this debate is really about. It's teacher unions are standing in the way, Democratic Party is standing in the way, but at the end of the day, the philosophical debate is the other side doesn't trust parents. We do. And I want to wrap up on Shane's question. He raises a very important question. You have to assess how well kids are doing. Parents, I think, are the ultimate judge. You'll hear parents tell you that, I want my child to go to a school that's safe, or I want my child to go to a school that teaches our values, or I want my child to go to a school that has uniforms, or I want my child to go to a school that excels in math or science, or I want my child, and the important thing is to empower those parents. I hear every day from parents saying, this is the first time my child's come home with homework, or is thinking about going to college, or is it safe, or going to a school with supplies, and the important thing is to empower parents. Transparency is important to give them the information, but in a free choice-based system, they will get to vote with their feet. They can decide what's good for them in terms of where they want to send their children to school. And that's ultimately what we need to move towards, and that's what this paper is about, is empowering parents. I want to thank all of you all for taking the time to be on this call. I'd encourage you to go to americannext.org. You can find the paper there and also see a lot more details than we were able to cover today. Thank you, guys.